story so far. A friend of mine is blind and is currently using Windows, I think XP, with a screen reader called JAWS, J-A-W-S. And I decided to try out a very exciting, very full of potential project called Emacs Speak. Emacs Speak is an extension to Emacs that is optimized so that everything can be narrated back to the user with a little built-in screen reader just for Emacs. Hi, my name is Klaatu, and this is the Bad Apples Linux Og and Speaks cast. Humble opinion, JAWS is a little bit like Orca, or vice versa. I don't know who wants to claim ownership of the idea, but it is a layer on top of the graphical layer, right, that looks at the graphics and describes to the user what is on their screen. The user is blind. They're never going to see what's on their screen, so to have the graphic layer present and then have a program on top of that trying to describe what exactly the screen contains and where your cursor is on the screen and things like that is a little bit backwards to me, simply because, I mean, think about it. If you're new-ish to the computer, or if you're newly blind and using a computer, you've got your screen, you've got JAWS telling you, okay, your cursor is on the file menu of OpenOffice right now. Well, what does that mean to you if you now want to click on a button somewhere else other than the file menu of OpenOffice, right? You have to know exactly, or you have to know how to get from there to where you want to be. And that's not always, I mean, on a graphical layout with your eyes that are seeing things, it's pretty easy. You know that your cursor is around the file menu right now. You look and you see that there's an icon on the desktop in the background that you want to click on, and so you simply move the mouse and click on that icon. But no such context is given, obviously, where something is simply concentrating on where your cursor is. So it is a little bit backwards, I think, and my friend felt the same way. She recognized the inefficiency, I guess, of trying to have a screen full of graphical elements described to her without any context of where everything is in relation to each other, what else exists on the screen, things like that. It certainly, if nothing else, it limits your style of computing, right? Because you're always only on whatever graphical element represents your current task, whereas the reason the graphic interface exists is so that you can have multiple tasks on the screen. You can scan them over with your eyes. You can look at everything that's happening, choose what you want to give attention to, and so on. The command line equivalent of that would be something like screen or Emacs with its little buffers, where you can switch back and forth between different activities and you can see which screen you want to stay on and work in. And you can even list processes or buffers and things like that and choose which one you want to give your attention to. So this is obviously a lot more logical because you can really only work on one thing at a time. I mean, no matter how many hands you have, you're probably still only working on one thing unless you've got like two mice going and you're just that ambidextrous. But realistically, you're working on one thing at a time. And so for someone who's not seeing anything anyway to have the graphical environment around them, just it's a lot of effort and CPU cycles and everything wasted. Whereas really what ought to be happening is that they're working in an environment where it does highlight a single task that you are working on and describe everything that relates to that single task. At least that's my thought on the subject. And I was talking about computing styles and blindness and things like that with my friend. She was agreeing with a lot of what I was saying and I with a lot of what she was saying. She had a lot of problems, obviously, with JAWS and the concept of computing in that style. The point being that when I found Linux about, I don't know, a year or two or three later, after we first started talking about this, I found Linux and I realized, I found the command line in general and started working on the command line a lot. And I realized that the potential for a blind person to be able to use a text-driven environment seemed really, really great, because now the screen reader only had to worry about what was going on the command line, and it seemed like a much more natural style for a screen reader to have to deal with. Found Linux, started to really get into that, and starting to really realize how much could be done without a graphical environment at all. You know, when you first find out about the command line, I think your first inclination is why do I need this? I understand that I can fix things really quickly if I go and copy and paste some code from a forum into my command line. Don't really know what's going on. And even so, it's just for fixes and things like that. Or maybe it's for managing some files sometimes. Maybe it's for running a sudo command or something as root. But you don't really realize the potential of actually going to a computer and spending 3 or 4 hours on the computer without ever firing up X. No graphical environment whatsoever. Obviously, if you really pursue that idea and you start really looking into the command line, and of course there's that episode that I did last season on the command line applications and kind of like sort of a, here's what the command line applications that I use every day are, and here's a little bit how to use them, you can get into essentially living in a graphicless environment, and you can realize how powerful it is. We've all probably spent hours and hours and hours on a computer, and just there's just no graphic environment. You know, you just don't bother firing it up because you don't need it for whatever you're doing. Or maybe you don't have it, or maybe you're not in front of the computer anyway, so you just SSH into it or whatever. So after you start doing that, you do realize how powerful the command line is and how robust it is. So as I started to realize this and started to really get into all the different command line applications, I started to really get excited about this as a potential solution for my friend in terms of computing without vision. So I excitedly told her about this, and in my own mind, I was pretty much sold on the idea. I figured it was going to be really, really easy. All I have to do is grab the get the command line, put some kind of screen reader on top of it, the deal is done, and you just give it to the blind person, and away she goes. Granted, there would be a learning curve of, you know, okay, well, what is a command line? But we've all done that before. That seems within reach to me. I mean, that's all of us, right? You don't just start using the command line from day one and understand it. You know, it takes a while. So there's a learning curve, but I figured it was probably doable, and my friend was certainly up for the challenge. So about a year ago, I guess now, I went down to her house, and she's in a different state, so it's not something that I can just run across town and visit. But went down to her place, must have been a year ago now, literally, and I took Fedora down there, and I an Ubuntu CD, you know, just my whole disk wallet of all the different distros that I've collected from magazines or from downloads and things, and threw Orca onto some install of GNOME, and it was working, and fire up a command line, and it's reading back what I'm typing, and wouldn't you know, something as simple as ls absolutely failed to work as expected or as required. Meaning that if you hit ls, it will say ls, it will repeat that to you. You hit return, and then it says bash prompt $, and that's it. So there could be 155 files in the directory, and it won't read any of them to you. It doesn't read the output of the command line. It simply repeats the input back to you. There might be a way around this. This was a year ago. I didn't know what I know now. There might be some way around this. You know, maybe piping all your commands through some other program. I think I did try to pipe it to less, actually. I could be wrong about that, but I think I did. So there might be a way around it, but it wasn't such... It wasn't an easy way around it. It wasn't something that you could really be expected to do all the time, I don't think. And then you've still got issues of applications like Pine and Lynx and things like that, where, again, you really need the... these are applications that obviously a blind computer user is going to expect on their computer, right? We all would. An email client, a web browser, a text editor that actually responds in a way that you can edit text. So this is all very important, and it wasn't happening. Tried to switch over to a virtual console, and of course you lose Orca at that point, because Orca is dependent upon a graphical environment to read back to you, so that wasn't working. So at that time, I attempted to do some, you know, install Festival, because I knew from Dave Yates's podcast, a lot of Linux links, Linux user Ogcast. I knew from him that there was this thing, there was a speech synthesizer, as they call it, called Festival, and that is, of course, his imaginary co-host Lynn is generated using that application. So I did try installing that, but that's just a speech synthesizer. It's not a screen reader or anything like that. It's just, if you tell it to say something, then it will repeat something back to you, but it's not going to sit there and narrate everything that you type on your command line. That wouldn't be necessarily a desirable thing for everyone if they just installed the festival. You know, they don't necessarily want the festival to start narrating everything that they ever do on their computer to them. So that didn't work. So fast forward about a year, and I'm still banging away at this problem, and finally she's ready for a new computer. And this time she's really, really ready. My friend is really, really ready to get Linux onto some computer that she can use and try out. So she emailed me a check, some money, and said, look, go out and buy a computer, get Linux on there, and then send it back to me. I will have someone else install Windows XP and JAWS for me, and I'll just dual boot for a while. And that way I can at least start playing around with Linux. So I went out, bought her the Toshiba 455, I think it was. I reviewed it in the last episode. So that notebook was hers, and it, you know, like I said in the episode, it was running really, really well, and it was making me kind of envious because her graphics card was actually running a lot better than any graphic card I'd ever had before in my life. So, and she wasn't even going to be using the graphics. So, aside from that, it was an Intel Mobile 4 chip, by the way. So if you ever come across a laptop with an Intel Mobile 4 chip, I can highly recommend that chip. It might have been a 4500, but apparently they're sort of the same thing anyway, or something. I'm not really sure, and that's not what I'm really trying to talk about. So the point is that the new Intel graphic cards are nice, and she's not going to use them. So I split her 250 GB hard drive in two, favoring the Windows partition because I figured she'd probably be generating more data on there right now, and then the other half with Slackware. And I decided to try out the very exciting, very full of potential project called Emacs Speak. Emacs Speak is it's an extension to Emacs that is optimized so that everything can be narrated back to the user with a little built-in screen reader just for Emacs. This is exciting because if you think about the old joke that Emacs is, it's a web browser and an email client and an RSS feed reader and a web browser and a shell, a great little shell, and an IRC client. Oh yeah, and by the way, it's got a text editor too. That's the joke. Well, it's not so much a joke as it is just kind of the truth. It is so extensible that people have been able to write all kinds of applications for Emacs. I mean, as my friend 330 on Linux Cranks found one time, and I've still got the extension to this day. I haven't actually used it yet, but Gneve, G-N-E-V-E, is a video editor for Emacs. You can actually edit video in Emacs. It's really, really incredible. So the possibilities are more or less endless, and this excited me because if someone has really come up with a way to get Emacs to speak everything that is going on the screen to the user, well, that just sounds like exactly what I'm looking for. So I decided to try it out. The problem with just sitting down and deciding that you're going to try Emacs Speak is that the documentation on Emacs Speak is patently horrible. And I don't mean that as like a bad thing against the Emacs Speak developers or anything like that. I mean, obviously Emacs Speak is a fantastic, fantastic application. And rather than just sitting here saying, gee, the Emacs Speak documentation is horrible, it would probably be a lot more constructive if I wrote up some kind of documentation for it. And actually, I did. So either the Emacs Speak documentation that I've written up is going to appear in a Linux magazine sometime in the near future. I've offered it to a couple of different ones. I'm just waiting to hear back if they want it. I figure that would be a very good way to get the information in the public eye, because most of the Linux magazines that I'm aware of have online editions eventually. So if you didn't go out and buy the Linux magazine when the article was printed, you can typically find it online later on. So that's a really good way to kind of get the documentation out there in front of everyone and make it fairly easy to find. And I'm going to discuss the antithesis to this in a moment. But the other option is to simply send it to the Slackware person, people, team, whatever, and say, hey, here's some documentation on Emacs Speak. Will you consider including it in the extra directory, because Slackware, the 32-bit at least, has in the extra directory on the installed DVD Emacs speak. It just doesn't have a whole lot of documentation on how to implement it, so I think this could be good for that as well. The third option, of course, is to simply post it online as a blog and just let it be. Fourth option is to send it to the Emacs speak development team. So of all these different options, I think that sending it to the Emacs speak developers and the publication in a Linux magazine seems to probably be the better option, because what we have now, I mean, if you search on the internet for Emacs speak, how to set up Emacs speak, or how to use Emacs speak, you know, whatever you want to search for, if you do that right now, you will find results. You will get lots and lots of results. The problem is, however, that the results are outdated. They're wrong. They're more questions than answers. They're unclear as to what exactly they are trying to accomplish, strangely enough. You know, they're not really all about the stuff that you'd think they were about. I mean, they simply don't tell you how to set up Emacs speak in a complete way. They talk about how to do it with some extra hardware, or, I mean, Emacs speak has a lot of, it's a very flexible application, and Linux is very flexible and it's very modular, and that adds to the flexibility. But when you're sitting down saying, okay, I want a computer to talk to me, then that's what you need. You want a post on how to make your computer talk to you by using Emacs speak. So I think getting a sort of a definitive, here is how to get your computer to all, just with only software, speak to you. And yes, some uber geeks might think, well, if it's just software, and yeah, Kajari, I'm talking to you. If it's just software, then when it crashes, the output goes away. And yeah, I realize that. I mean, the better option, the complete solution would be to have an external hardware device independent of all your software. But you know what? I figure if your computer crashes, your computer crashes. And unless you are an uber geek, what are you going to do? Whether you're blind or not, you're going to reach for the power button and restart. Or if you know a little bit more, you might try to do a control alt F1 or F2 or F5, whatever, you know, get over to another virtual console and see if you can log in on a different screen and fix it from there. Same goes for if you're blind. I mean, if it crashes, you can try to switch over to a virtual console, try to log in, and Emacs speak will start talking to you and you can try to rescue the system or whatever. So that's my thoughts on where to put this documentation. The other options are pretty good too, and one way or the other, I'm going to get the documentation out there, and I guess this podcast episode is one of those ways. So this implementation of Emacs speak is going to be based on Slackware, because Slackware 13 in the 32-bit release, at least, comes right there. If you download the whole DVD, right there in the extra directory on the DVD, there is a Slack package for Emacs speak and Emacs speak-ss. This means that it's pretty easy to get Emacs speak installed from basically your install process. And I also am very concerned about Emacs speak getting broken at some point. The worst case scenario would be you get Emacs speak up and running, configured perfectly, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, it works for a week, and then Ubuntu or Fedora or whoever sends out one of their regular updates and something happens and Emacs speak no longer works. That's a deal breaker for someone relying on Emacs speak. So I'm going with Slackware because it tends to not do that to you. So if you're looking for an Emacs speak system that will enable you to put it on your computer and be driven entirely on a software basis, meaning that you do not have to go out and purchase an external voice box, you know, a speech synthesizer or something that you can plug into your computer and have it sit there and speak to you. There are apparently devices like this, although I've never actually seen one. My friend doesn't have one. JAWS seems to be entirely software-based, so I don't really know what exactly these things are, but you will see references to them all over the place online. They will confuse you. They are one of the many options that, like I say, a very flexible system like Linux and a very flexible application like Emacs and Emacs Speak will allow you to have. You know, if you need that ability to have Emacs speak to an external speech synthesizer, an external voice box, then you can do that. We're not after that right now. We want a computer, possibly a laptop, since they're very, very common these days, that you can grab, throw in your bag, take out to the cafe, sit down, and start up, and next thing you know, you are computing, just like all the sighted people around you. So that's what this guide is for. If you're looking for anything other than that, this guide is not going to serve your purposes directly, although you might be able to learn something from it anyway. So I should also give a disclaimer that I am not blind. I did this entire process with my eyes open. I was here, there, and everywhere online. I was downloading things. I was switching windows. I was doing whatever I wanted to, essentially. So this is not a non-sighted guide. This is something that I imagine a blind person would have to have someone do with them in order to get all this working, because I don't know of a way to do this without a sighted person, unless you can do all this via Orca. You know, you could configure your system with Orca and then turn off the, you know, X and then continue without Orca and just use Emacs because your environment. Whether, how hard that is, you know, I know that Jonathan, a blind Linux user that I talked with fairly recently, he did get Orca and GNOME up and running in Slackware, so it's entirely possible. I've never done it. I've never bothered. I don't care for GNOME. I just never really bothered. So, I mean, I like GNOME, but I don't like it enough to install it on my system. Anyway, first step is to install Slackware. 32-bit version is easiest simply because everything you need is, well, I should say almost everything you need is right there on the extra directory in the install DVD. So you're going to install Slackware, as I've related many times before. Most recently, last season, a couple of episodes ago, I went through, I think, 2 episodes on how to install version 13 of Slackware. So listen to that if you're not sure how to do it. It should help you along. It's not really as hard as you might think. In fact, I think it's quite easy. And so, yeah, install Slackware. There is no need to install KDE or XFCE or really any of the X-related libraries or packages. You can if you want to, but if you're for some reason wanting to slim down this system or something, you can certainly do that. What you do want to make sure is installed is Emacs, so that would be package E for Emacs. It's got Emacs and a whole bunch of cool Emacs extensions, like Elisp extensions or plugins or whatever they're called. So you can install that. There's also, you need some of the development stuff, specifically TCL, TK, and I think TCLX. So it's not something that you really have to look for. If you do a default install, you'll get all that anyway. I'm just saying, do not exclude Emacs, do not exclude TCL, TK, and TCLX. You will need those things. You will also need things like ALSA, Bash, the usual kind of stuff that you're going to be using. So don't exclude any of that stuff. As for the graphic related stuff, you can do whatever you want to. There are cheats. The obvious ones would be ZenWalk. The other one would be Salix, I think, SalixOS.org. This was covered by Verbal from Chicago and Mrs. Verbal on the Linux Trivia podcast very recently here. So if you check that episode out, they talk a little bit about Salix. It's apparently a fork of ZenWalk. That would be another cheat. Wolvix is another. And also there's SLAMP, S-L-A-M-P-P. Some of them are smaller downloads. I mean, like SLAMP, ZenWalk, Salix, Wolvix. Okay, all of them are smaller downloads. If you're going to do that, there might be a trade-off about what version of which package you're getting and whether or not they include TCL and TK and TCLX and all that other good stuff. But if you set up Slack PKG and SBO PKG, then you should be able to go ahead and install anything else that you need just right onto that system, whether it installed it by default or not. And again, the things that you're going to need definitely are Emacs and TCL, TK, and TCLX. All right, so you've got Slackware installed, yes, okay, good. And now the first screen of the Slackware installation, I should have mentioned actually, so pretend like you don't have it installed yet. Before you install Slackware, I used the SpeakUp kernel, which is speakup.s, so that's the first screen when you boot up off of a Slackware install disk, and I do mean Slackware install disk. They ask you what kernel you'd like to use, and one of the kernels available, well, one is like huge smp.s or something like that. The other one is generic or something. And then there's one speakup.s. So if you type in speakup.s, then you're using the speakup kernel, and I guess that is optimized or enabled to use these little external software synthesizers, from what I understand. I didn't understand that at the time, so I don't believe that you actually have to use the speakup.s kernel. I went ahead and used it, and even after I realized that speakup.s wasn't for a software-based speech synthesizer. I went ahead and still used it because, well, it was working, and also because I figure, what if someone wants to, you know, maybe you don't think you need a support for the external synthesizer right now, but what if you do at some point? You might as well just have the SpeakUp.s kernel, I figure. So that's what I used and installed. The rest of the install, you can just do as is. Like I say, you can listen to my old episode on installing Slackware, you can read the Slack book, whatever you need to do. Or you can intuit it, it's not that hard. So after you've installed it, of course, you're going to log in as root, create your user, blah blah blah. Make sure that this user is included in the audio group, right? Because you want to have access to audio activity. And then you can insert the install DVD of Slackware, again, into your disks, into your computer's optical drive. You can mount it and then go into the extra directory. So to mount it, of course, it would be //c/\mount/dev/cdrom/mnt/cdrom(). Then you enter your root password, and then you can change directory /cd/mnt/cdrom/extra. Now in this extra directory, as I've mentioned before, there are lots of cool little extra things. One of the things you're going to want to install is Wicked, W-I-C-D, and yes, you might think, but I don't use Wicked, I use some other thing. Well, you probably want to use Wicked because Wicked is actually quite compatible with this GUI-less environment that we're going to be creating. There's actually a incurses interface to Wicked. I think the Last Known God told me about that actually in IRC one day. I had no idea. And sure enough, there is. You can just type in WICD-curses in the command line, and you'll get a very robust and fully featured interface for your wireless network connection manager. And it's all there, right there on your command line. So it's really cool and very, very helpful, especially for someone who's not going to be using a GUI environment. So to install that, you would just do as root, so /pkg /wicked/wicked.whateverthe-version-is.tgz into single quote, and then you can also find in the extra directory two important packages that we're going to install as well, Emacs Speak and Emacs Speak -ss. Once again, the -ss isn't really necessary. As far as I know, it includes support for other sound servers that I don't think we're actually using. But because I was doing this when I completely had no idea what I was doing, I did this. And I'm going to go ahead again and recommend that you do it simply because it doesn't hurt to have the extra support. In the days of, you know, 50 megabyte hard drives, yeah, we might have wanted to, we might leave this extra stuff out. But, I mean, the computer that I bought my friend was 250 gigabytes. I didn't know what to do with all the space that I'd allotted for the Linux partition, and I'd allotted not as much for the Windows partition. So really, a little bit of extra support, not going to be a bad thing. So go ahead and install pkg.emacspeak/emacspeak.x.x.x.tgz and install pkg./emacspeak-ss/whateverversion/emacspeak-ss.whateverversion.tgz. I'm hoping you're getting the idea. I'm going through all that stuff pretty fast. Like I say, all this documentation is going to pop up magically online at some point anyway. But yes, that's what you want to do. You want to install Wicked, Emacs Speak, and Emacs Speak -ss. Okay, so technically speaking, at this point, Emacs Speak is actually installed. We're in theory finished, and that's the kind of answer you'd get if you did an internet search on how to use this thing. That's all you have to do to install Emacs Speak. Well, yes, Emacs Speak is installed, but the computer doesn't exactly know what to do with it. So if you fire up Emacs Speak right now, it should launch. So it will launch a familiar Emacs interface, and there will be an error down in the little mini buffer down at the bottom of Emacs, and it will say that the speaker process is not running, or something like that. And you will not hear it. It will simply say that on the screen, but it will not say that audibly. And this is the problem. Right now, the computer doesn't know. I mean, Emacs Speak is trying to talk to you, but the computer doesn't know where to route that sound. In order to do that, well, in order to enable sound, we need to get a speech synthesizer, right? So you've got Emacs Speak, the thing that is trying to narrate for you, and that's in one corner of the ring. And then in the other corner of the ring, you've got a speech synthesizer, which is the thing that generates a human-like voice. And this is the kind of thing that you've heard on Dave Yates' podcast with Festival and things like that. You've got this speech synthesizer that if you give it a series of letters, it will try to pronounce them. Okay? So, again, there's going to be a lot of confusion online if you do an internet search for this, because a speech synthesizer can be software-based, it can be proprietary, it can be open source, it can be hardware-based. So you're going to find all kinds of references to random speech synthesizers. Some of them are going to be from the year 1997. Some are going to be from 2001 and 2002. And I think that's about it. And so half of them, I mean, there are going to be links online all over the place. Go here to IBM's website and download the developer kit for the Linux version of VoiceOver. None of this seems to exist anymore. I've tried. I've searched. I've registered with IBM. I've searched their site for VoiceOver. I've run in circles. This took me like 3 days straight, 3 days all day to figure out. So I think I've investigated it pretty thoroughly, but it's all wrong. So what you need is basically the one speech, the one free and open source remaining, the speech synthesizer, the last standing one. There's one that is around that still actually works, and it's called Flyte, F-L-I-T-E. It is not a particularly robust and fully featured speech synthesizer. It's not one of those that you can fire up and insert different voices, festival voices, and all this other stuff. Of course, they say on their site that you can, and then they give you like a little sample code of how to convert festival voices written in C for Flyte or something like that. Definitely not something, certainly, I'm going to be doing anytime soon, so probably not something that just the average blind user is going to just dive in and decide, oh, I think I'll modify Lynn's voice from Dave Yates' podcast so that I can have Lynn on my computer. Flyte has one voice. It's a very funky, fast-talking, male-sounding voice, and that, as far as I can tell, is what you get with Flyte. The upside of Flyte is that it's really, really lightweight. It was designed for embedded systems and stuff like that, and it is apparently fairly well maintained, by which I mean I think they had an update back in 2005, as opposed to the other synthesizers, which were like last updated back in 1977. And I'm exaggerating in both of those things, but my point being that if you want this to work, and you want it to work easily and quickly, go with Flyte. Where can you find Flyte? The easiest way to find Flyte is simply to go to SBOPKG. So become root, or do an SU space dash C, and then issue the command SBOPKG. And again, you can do this with any of the, if you're cheating and you're using Zenwalk or Salix or Wolvik or Slamp, you can install SBOPKG as well, no problem. So install SBOPKG, run it, SBOPKG, and then do a search for Flyte, F-L-I-T-E, and just have it install. If you absolutely either cannot use SBOPKG for some reason or don't want to use it, then you can probably find some kind of trusted RPM out there for Flyte, maybe from the Fedora repositories or something, and then just use RPM to TGZ to convert it to a Slack package. But I used SBOPKG. It installed it in no time, and all was well with the world. The speech synthesizer is now technically installed, okay? So you've got Emacs Speak in one corner. You've got the speech synthesizer in another corner. And you can test the speech synthesizer by simply typing in something like flyte-t, quote, hello world, end quote. That will call Flyte to speak the text, hello world. If you hear hello world from your computer, then Flyte is installed, and it is talking to ALSA correctly, and ALSA is talking to your computer speakers correctly, and you're kind of ready to go, right? Wrong. One last component that you need, which once again, no one seems to want to explain online with any amount of clarity, and this is called a speech server, and these little servers are, well, they're sort of like a connection between Emacs Speak and your speech synthesizer. So you've got Emacs Speak over here, you've got your speech synthesizer over there. You can fire up Flyte and have it talk to you. You can fire up Emacs Speak and have it try to talk to you. But Emacs Speak doesn't know Flyte exists, and Flyte doesn't know Emacs Speak exists, right? They're just two separate applications. They happen to be on your computer, but that doesn't mean there's any kind of bridge between them. So you need a sound server, a speech server, to bridge these two applications together so that Emacs Speak can send up some data to the server. The sound server can say, oh, I'll pipe that over to Flyte for you, and then Flyte speaks it out to you, okay? So the speech server that you need to use, and again, there are many out there, there are links that are dead, there are things that will never work, there are VoiceOver servers that don't seem to exist anymore, and just all kinds of interesting things, projects that have been dead or abandoned or bought up or whatever, so just ignore all those. The one that you want is eFlyte, that is E-F-L-I-T-E, and the eFlyte documentation is fantastic. The hard part is, of course, finding it, but But now that you know about it, if you download it from eflight.sourceforge.net, that is eflight.sourceforge.net, then it's really, really easy to compile and everything. It's not hard at all. So you simply extract eFlight, change directory into it, read the README, and read the install. It is very simple. When you're ready to install it, run .configure, and when you're ready to make the application, you know, to actually build it, you can type in make as you normally would, but don't type make install yet. So just first make it, and then eFlight should automatically detect all your flight libraries and all the include files and stuff like that. If not, you can manually define where they are with .configure options, you know, like libdir equals user lib 64, whatever. But again, just read the README and the install files for specifics. But anyway, after you've typed in make and it's done building, then you can type in make test, and you should hear a voice confirming that eFlight is working. If you don't hear that voice, then something is wrong. What would be wrong? Probably, I mean, well, you shouldn't install it until you diagnose the problem, so you have to kind of figure out what the problem is. Now, if eFlight compiled, then you probably do have all the flight libraries and things installed correctly, because eFlight found everything. The most likely problem I can think of is that ALSA isn't working correctly, or your PC speakers aren't being recognized. Maybe you need to insert a module so that your speakers are detected. If you had already tested Flight and it worked, but eFlight isn't working, then possibly you've just got your sound turned all the way down, and I would check like ALSA Mixer or something like that. So assuming everything's working correctly at this point, type in make install, and it would install eFlight into the correct directories on your system. So now that you've got everything installed, you've got all the big three components taken care of. You've got Emacs Speak running or able to run, you've got Flight able to talk to you, you've got eFlight working correctly, so all the components are there. The only thing left to do, I never said this was easy, the only thing left to do is to now tell your environment, set an environment variable so that Emacs Speak knows to use eFlight. And the way that you do this, well, let's just do a test first, okay? So what you can do is just in your command line, as is, just as your normal user, you're just sitting there on bash, right? Type in, all in capitals, DTK, that is Delta Tango Kilo, _ program, that's just like the word program, equals /usr/local/bin/eFlight. Got it? That's all capitals for the DTK _ program. And then as normal, you know, normal, all lowercase basically, /user/local/bin/eFlight. Now you've just set an environment variable called DTK_program to be eFlight, basically. And now you can type in export DTK_program, again, all capitals because it's a variable, and now start up Emacs Speak. The moment you start up Emacs Speak by just typing in Emacs Speak, you should hear voices narrating everything to you. You should hear pretty quickly a voice will say, you know, welcome to Emacs Speak, this is version whatever, all my circuits are functioning, and whatever that HAL quote is. So there you go. That's how you get Emacs Speak talking to you and working as expected. Now, of course, your job isn't finished because we've done this in kind of a test environment or whatever. So we need to make all of this work every time, you know, so that the user doesn't have to define the DTK_program variable every time before they type in Emacs Speak. Obviously, you don't want your user to have to do that. So and please do note that if you change your shell or close that shell or log out, you know, and then log back in, you could lose the variable setting. So you want to make sure that you define the DTK_program as eFlight, export it, and then type in Emacs Speak all in one go. You know, you want to do it to make sure it works all at once. If you define the variable and then walk away and then forget and you log into some other console or something, it might not work because the DTK_program may not have been set, you know, still it might not be set in that instance of bash that you're running or whatever. You can always verify that variable is set to what you think it should be set to by simply running echo $ all capitals DTK_program. That would, of course, echo back, ideally, /user/local/bin/eFlight. And if it does not, then that variable has not been set, and you need to set it again. All right, so we're assuming at this point, if you're still listening, you're still with me, at this point we've got everything working, we've verified that it all works. So we've got a working, talking system, and now what we need to do is tweak the system so that every time the blind user logs into their system, this all works behind the scenes. They don't have to think about it. Easiest way to do that And this is for the user. I'm sure there's some kind of, well, I know that there's some kind of system-wide way of doing this, but I'm going to assume that just one user on this computer is blind. So we're just going to do this on a per-user basis. So you can make that variable stick by establishing a .bash_profile file in the user's home directory. So just as the user, as the blind user's login, you want to Vim or Emacs or whatever you use. I know it's funny that I use Vim to configure an Emacs speak environment. That's probably like kind of a faux pas, but anyway, open .bash_profile in a text editor of your choice. And you want to type in, or you could even do it this way. Yeah, here's what you can do. Echo, quote, DTK_program, again, that would all be caps, equals /user/local/bin/eFlight, and then semicolon, export DTK_program, end quote. And redirect that to the home directory of that user, /.bash_profile, and that places that setting, the DTK program being set to user local bin eFlight, to the .bash profile, so that every time they start a bash instance, it is understood by bash that DTK_program is eFlight. And then you can also do, just to make things a little bit smoother for the user, this is what I did anyway, is I did an echo single quote alias space Emacs equals, quote, Emacs speak, end quote, end single quote, and redirect that, so that's greater than, because you want to add to this file, not overwrite it. So greater than, home directory, /.bash_profile. So we've just added a line in .bash_profile that sets, if they type in Emacs, it now launches Emacs speak instead. Not that the blind user is going to actually have to launch Emacs themselves. We can tweak it so that Emacs speak launches automatically when they log in, and I'll show you how to do that in a moment. So now if you log out and then log back in, you know, close bash and then log back in, and do an echo $DTK_program, it should return user local bin eFlight. That would mean that your .bash_profile is working and everything is good. Now you should be able to launch Emacs speak by typing in Emacs, and then Emacs speak should work. You should hear it as expected, and so that's all smoothed over now. So we're done with that. The next thing that you want to do probably is kind of tweak the system so that from the time the computer boots to the time that the user is going to log in, you know, they get a lot of audio feedback. And by default, obviously, there's not all that much audio feedback that's going to happen when you turn on a computer, on a Linux box, and then log in. So what we can do for this is, the way I would do it is edit lilo.conf, which is found in your /etc directory. So if you just do an Emacs /etc/lilo.conf, then that will open up lilo.conf, and somewhere in Lilo, near the bottom, but not exactly near the bottom, not at the bottom, but near it, there is a line called timeout. And by default in Slackware, I think the timeout is 1,200/10 of a second, so it would be 600 for every minute, so that's like a 2-minute timeout period. Especially if you're not dual booting, I would make the timeout 10, you know, I mean, make it very, very brief, because you don't need to switch to anything else. I mean, maybe even just timeout at 0, I mean, just have it go straight through Lilo. So you could do that, or you can make it a little bit longer or shorter or whatever for the blind user if they are dual booting. There's no way that I know to get audio here, so it's going to be one of those cases where you have either Windows or Linux on the boot screen, and the user knows that after they turn it on, in a few moments, they can either press the up or the down button, and then they will get, you know, if Windows is the default and they press down, enter, then they'll be in Linux. That's pretty easy. I've done that. I've closed my eyes. I've logged in 1,000 times using that method, and it seems to work just fine. I'm pretty comfortable with dropping that on the user and just saying, well, that's how you start the computer. Not a big deal. Very similar to, you know, giving a Mac to someone and saying, okay, if you hold down the Option key when you boot, then you're going to have the choice between Linux or OS X. And if you don't catch the option at the right, you know, during the boot, then you're not going to have that option. You have to reboot. It's not completely graceful and elegant, but it does the job, so okay. Now after that, the big problem is that you need an audible login prompt so that, you know, after all the kernel messages scroll past your screen and everything is loaded, you know, all the modules are loaded properly and the network is found and all the different things that, you know, all the different partitions are mounted or checked or whatever needs to happen during the boot sequence, then you get the login prompt, right? A textual login prompt. Problem here is that the blind user will never know when it stops, you know, like when is it waiting for them to log in? So the way to do this would be to call Flight, our little speech synthesizer, and have it speak something to us at the very end of the boot process and right before the beginning of the prompt process. There might be some way to make the prompt process do this. I don't really know where the prompt is held. I don't know where to look for that place, but I do know where the end of the boot process is, and that is, of course, in /etc/rc.b/rc.local. The rc.local file is the final file in the boot sequence, and it is, as the name suggests, just kind of some of your local options that you might want to have done that might not be normal for the boot process, but it's something that you know that you want done. So you add it to your rc.local file. This is very easy to do. You become root, and then you echo space single quote exec, that is exec, exec space /users/bin/flight /t normal quote, please log in, end normal quote, end single quote, redirect, so that's > /etc/rc.d/rc.local. So you've just appended to the rc.local file that you want Flight located in user/bin, whatever message you want it to say. You know, you can say anything. It can just, as long as it makes some sound so that the blind user knows that the kernel messages have stopped scrolling and is now waiting for the prompt, then that will work. So now if you reboot, you will find that right at the end of the boot process, it does call rc.local, and Flight will announce that it is time to log in. It will take maybe one beat, you know, just one little moment for the boot process to truly end and then the prompt to appear. So if you were to start typing at the very moment you heard, hi, please log in, like if you started typing right at hi, you might be typing before the prompt. So you want to let it say whatever it's going to say, and then you want to wait a moment, and then you log in. Again, this is something, this I find fairly elegant. I think this is totally acceptable. I do not think that's a hack. I have logged in this way with my eyes closed many times on the computer that I sent to my friend. I never had a problem with it. You would hear the announcement that it's waiting for you to log in. You would wait just one beat, and then you would start typing. Worked every time. It does not announce your user, you know, it doesn't read back your username to you or your password. Those are both probably great security features. Not by design, of course, just that I wouldn't know how to make it speak that stuff to you if I wanted it to, but it does work. So there you go. Now, after a successful login, it would be kind of cool if Emacs Speak would just start automatically, right? Well, this, as it turns out, is really easy to do as well. So what you can do is echo single quote exec exec space /user/bin/emacspeak end single quote space > space /.bash_profile, meaning that you've just sent a line, you've just appended your .bash_profile file, which already has that DTK program variable setting in it and the Emacs and Emacs Speak alias set in it. Well, now it's got, at the very bottom of it, it's got a setting so that anytime you start a new bash shell, Emacs Speak is automatically started within that shell. This is really, really nice feature. I'd honestly forgotten I'd done it, and I was playing around on this computer, and I decided, well, I think I'll switch over to another console, a virtual console, to check, you know, whatever I was doing. I forget what I was doing, but I switched over, and I logged in as that username again, and lo and behold, it started a new instance of Emacs Speak automatically, and I thought this was really, really cool. So then I started a screen session. I think I exited out of Emacs Speak, I think, and then started a screen session and started Emacs, or yeah, started, so for every bash within screen, Emacs Speak kept starting. I mean, it was just flawless. Something like that. It was flawless, though. Everything I would start with Emacs Speak already started for this user, which is exactly what you want to have happen. You know, if something does crash and she has to start a new shell, then it's just, I mean, Bash and Emacs Speak are almost synonymous now. You know, anytime, if you start Bash under your user profile, then Emacs Speak is going to launch. So it's really, really nice feature. It works really well, and it all works quite nicely. The beautiful thing about Emacs is that it's endlessly extensible. You can add all kinds of applications to it, and it can do all kinds of things. It can browse the web, it can check your email, read a news server, it can edit video, it can play multimedia with EMMS, it's an Emacs multimedia system. It can just do everything. It can start a shell, eShell. It can start IRC sessions, ERC. It can just do all kinds of things. And the cool thing about the Slackware implementation of Emacs Speak is that they've got a lot of these little extensions these extensions already installed for you, which is really great. So basically all you quite frequently have to do is type in Alt X and it will give you a little prompt to start some kind of plugin. And so you type in the name of the plugin. So if you hit Alt X and then eShell, it will launch a little shell right there within Emacs or Emacs Speak as the case may be. And you can you will find that if you do an ls, unlike when we did it with Orca, it will actually read all the contents of Orca out to you. It's really, really, really slick. Emacs Speak is designed for, I think it's either by a blind user or just someone who really knows blind users really well, because it acts exactly like you would think it should act. It reads everything that you would imagine a screen reader should read you. And it really makes plain text computing completely as accessible as it already should be for the blind user. So definitely, definitely look into this. If you've got a blind friend, check this out. This is something that you're going to really, really enjoy. It is an amazing little system. And definitely check out the Emacs Wiki, because there are all kinds of little extensions and plugins. They're called eLisp, which is, I guess, Emacs Lisp. eLisp programs that people write for every conceivable function that you could ever want to do in Emacs. I mean, whether it's programming or listening to music or file management, there's a little program called Sunrise Commander, which is obviously like Midnight Commander, except it's Sunrise Commander. So, you know, just all kinds of things. And you can download them from the Emacs Wiki, install them, and use them within Emacs Speak. It's really, really nice. So the Emacs Speak extension set seems to have their own little tweaked versions of a lot of these little applications. So some of them require a little bit of setup, but if you look in user share Emacs site-list/Emacs Speak, you should find a whole bunch of little applications that are already there and ready to be used. So be sure to check that out. So yeah, I mean, check out Emacs Speak. It really is a great little system, and now it's got some great documentation to go along with it. So good luck, and have fun with it. Okay, some listener feedback, and after this I should be pretty much caught up on most of the listener feedback from between the 4th season and the 5th season. So, apparently I mentioned in one of the recent episodes the bad apples meaning something towards the end of season 4. I was talking about Tiny Core, and I was saying that you had to be careful if you were going to have /usr/bin on a different partition. What I meant apparently is /bin/sbin. And this is from Dan Washko. I don't know if I mentioned that. So Dan from Tilts noticed that, yeah, I was saying don't have /usr/bin on a different partition, because then your system won't be able to boot because there's stuff in user/bin that you are going to need. Well, this is of course not true, and I knew this, and I know this, and it was just one of those things I got wrong. But yes, so if you need to have /bin/sbin on the primary partition, because that's the stuff that holds the really, really important necessary system binaries that are required to mount things and all the other stuff that happens during boot. You know, that's when that happens. /usr/bin holds stuff that is external or separate from boot process. You don't need it for booting up. So thank you, Dan, for that clarification, for that correction even. Dan, or Daniel, I guess. Dan, I don't know. Dan from Myth TV Cast wrote me. Apparently he's been listening to my show lately, which is cool because Myth TV Cast is, of course, the other OGG cast out there. You know, it's one of those shows that decided to release only in OGG, and I think that's really cool. In terms of audience, I mean, I know that Linux Cranks, which is an Oddcast, has a really, really big audience. I know that Mythcast probably has quite a sizable audience because Myth is so popular. I mean, people are really interested in Myth, and not just Linux users. You know, people hear about Myth and they're really excited about it and want to try it out, and they want to create their own media center, and then they get into Linux, or they find that they have to understand a little bit about Linux, but whatever. But yeah, Myth is a really broad topic. Apparently they say that the reason they went OGG only, or that they started the show as an OGG only show, was just simply because they didn't want to bother with more than one feed and exporting more than once and stuff like that. And they felt that they had a niche market. I imagine that they are probably wrong. They probably have a very broad market. Let's not tell them that, because I see it as people coming to their podcast probably hoping, or their Augcast, hoping for misinformation and finding that, oh, they need some weird, they're using some weird free codec. Gee, what's all this about? And the rest, of course, will be history. So it's really cool that they're Aug only. I really, really, really respect that. I think it's really cool. I think more shows should do it. So I think a lot more shows should do it, really. I think that if we all disempower the MP3 owners, then that would be really cool. So do that, won't you? Turn your show into an Augcast. Join the little revolution. Little quiet revolution. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that Dan is listening to the show and apparently enjoying it, and he just was asking about, like, how much of a break do I take between seasons and stuff like that. And I told him that I didn't really mean to take much of a break at all. I actually meant for the show to just roll right into the next season, but I had some cable issues with my Nokia N800, and I record all my shows on my N800, so I wasn't being able to charge it because of a physical cable issue. It wasn't anything aside from physical cable issue. So let's see, Deep Geek, what's he up to? Well, of course, he's still releasing Talk Geek to Me. That's exciting. It's cool. You should definitely check that show out if you haven't already. But lately, he's been really into the whole gopher thing, and I don't remember where this conversation got started. I remember talking to Skirlet about it. We might have talked about this generally on one of the roundtables of HPR. I don't really remember, but at some point, he and I and Sigflup and Skirlet just kind of started talking back and forth about gopher and the possibility of kind of creating a gopher underground web, or recreating or maintaining or whatever. And I think that this is important stuff, because the more and more the internet becomes commercialized and all that other good stuff, I think the more and more in danger of us all being controlled and limited and censored becomes. And I know that organizations out there like EFF exist, and Free Software Foundation does a little bit of this too, you know, trying to protect the user's rights and the user's freedom, basically. But it's just, it rankles that we need organizations to protect our freedom. And I would much rather just settle into a nice little niche where there's no threat to our freedom anyway. We don't need protection because we are free. So, whatever all that means. But, I mean, the point is that Gopher is really cool, and the potential to have a private internet or a lesser-known internet or, you know, whatever, I mean, it's out there. And Gopher is one way that you could kind of start to implement this. I mean, you could do it a million other ways too, but for some reason we got onto Gopher, and so he set up a little Gopher server and has been doing some stuff with that, and eventually I want to have a little Gopher site for the Bad Apples and start playing around with that. And as I've said many, many times before, sdf.lonestar.org, that is superdomainfortress.lonestar.org, is a place where you can get a free shell account. You can actually just log in, you can be on a, I think it's a NetBSD box off in Seattle somewhere, and they will serve Gopher sites and all that other good stuff, and there's a community there and all that other nifty, neat stuff, so try that out. Ron, Macro Ron, sent me a couple of links to the YouTubes with, like, Fedora installation guide and some Red Hat videos. And I guess Red Hat just has a channel or whatever. I think it's either Red Hat or Fedora, I forget which. I think it's Red Hat. I'll include a link in the show notes to the YouTube video, and then you can explore around from there. But that's kind of cool. Some really neat Fedora content. There's a Google shortener, a URL shortener, apparently from Google, and it's goo.gl, and then I guess there will be a little slash and, you know, a short term that you can remember easier. It's for that whole, like, go to this link, and it's like this really short URL, and it redirects you automatically to some other URL. I don't use those. I don't click on those. I think they're highly overrated, but I know some people are really into them. So if you want to you want to start using Google for that, go for it. Acid Flux wrote me again lately about Q-Tractor. I know he wrote earlier. I think I read it in an earlier episode, but he was saying that he was screwing around with Ubuntu and Q-Tractor, and he just couldn't seem to get a lot of the things right, like specifically that Jack-D wouldn't run, even if he launched, or I guess it was trying to require him to start it as root or something like that. I forget. But yeah, he was having problems with it, and I just kind of reiterated to him that, well, number one, the Slacker Media Project does not support Ubuntu, but I was only kidding about that. But, you know, I just reiterated that I think of Ubuntu and Ubuntu Studio and all these other pre-built environments in much the same way that I think about XChat versus IRSSI, for instance. Strange analogy, but bear with me. XChat, when I was first listening to podcasts and Chess Griffin was always talking about IRC, and come into IRC and say hi. I had no idea what IRC was. I'd never been on IRC, so on Linux, I finally decided, okay, this time I'm going to try it. So I fire up XChat, and it's a pretty friendly application and well designed and everything. And I could use it probably now, but I have used it on my Nokia with success. But at the time, having no idea about anything, I fired up XChat, and just had no idea what to do. Couldn't get into IRC. Didn't know to sign onto a server. Didn't know that I had to create a nickname for myself. I just had no clue. So starting up IRSSI the next day, it was just so much simpler. It was so easy. You could do a man on IRSSI and find out some of the commands. It was a lot easier. So same goes for Ubuntu Studio or something like that versus Slackware, because I don't know how Ubuntu sets things up. I don't know how they're implementing Jack. I don't know how they're implementing or having Jack talk to Pulse or whatever. And I'm not trying to pick on Ubuntu either. I mean, the same goes for even Fedora and anything else that I might happen across. I don't really know enough about the way that they design their system so that I can accurately design my system on top of their design. Slackware, on the other hand, is pretty much, it's just very plain vanilla. You know, if you understand the basics of what ALSA is, you understand the basics of what Zorg is, you understand the basics of what a server, you know, a sound server is and what it can do and all this other stuff, then you can just kind of start building up on top of Slackware, and that's why Slacker Media, I think, is a very wise choice. And if you don't know what Slacker Media is, go to slackermedia.info, and that's about as much advertising for that as I want to do. But really, all I was trying to say was Acid Flux, he's going to try the same thing, but on Slackware 13, and I anticipate he's going to have a much easier time of it. He'll have to install QTractor from the source, but again, that's a good thing, because you can do your ./configure options, and look at all the options that you've got. You can install it from source, and then you know that it is the latest version with all the latest plugin support and all that other good stuff. So I think you'll have better luck on Slackware. And as for doing it on Ubuntu, I think you have to you certainly have to have the user added to the audio group. I mean, that makes sense. And it's probably already that on Ubuntu, I would imagine. But I think there might be something having to do with, you have to have, I could be wrong about all this, but I think you also have to have real-time priority set or real-time access set in a file called /etc/security/limits.conf. And you have to go in there and edit it so that where it's, you know, you have your real-time kernel installed and everything, so you then need to give that user or those applications access to the real-time priority or something like that. I don't know, and I don't run it, and I don't use it enough to know what I'm talking about, but if you Google around for that kind of thing, you'll probably find some potential answers there. And that's about all the listener feedback I've really got right now. So, I mean, I actually had a lot more, but now that I'm looking at it, it's got a lot of Fedora-related stuff, so I might as well save that for the next Fedora Reloaded episode rather than trying to take it all for myself. So thanks for listening, and until next time. So that's the show for this week. Thank you for listening. This has been Klaatu. My email address is klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org or klaatu@linuxcranks.info. You can also reach me on Jabber at notklaatu@jabber.org. You can also visit the site at thebadapples.info, and you can find me on IRC on the Freenode server in channels like Lotta Linux Links and Linux Cranks and other such Linux-related places as that. And my nick on there is notklaatu. Thanks for listening.